Our gospel lesson this morning is drawn from Mark, the 6th chapter, and we're going to be reading verses 30 to 34 and then skipping ahead to 53 to 56. Now, what Mark describes in today's reading comes on the heels of John the Baptist's execution and the disciples' successful preaching mission. Jesus and the disciples desire rest, but we see what happens when the crowd, the sheep without a shepherd, come looking for the one who said, "I am the good shepherd." Also, please note that the section that we're going to leave out is Mark's version of the feeding story. And so how Jesus responds is by feeding the people. Listen now to the good news spoken to a needy world, according to Mark. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a lonely place by themselves. Now many saw them going and knew them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great throng, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And then moving ahead to verse 53. And when they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret and moored to the shore. And when they got out of the boat, immediately the people recognized him and ran about the whole neighborhood and began to bring sick people on their pallets to any place where they heard he was. And wherever he came, in villages, cities, or country, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and besought him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment. And as many as touched it were made well. They would be blessed in the hearing of this word. Come away to a deserted place all by yourself and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. R&R, rest and relaxation. It was the great goal of American society, especially post-World War II. As a result, we live in an incredible time. The labor-saving technologies we've developed have enabled us to work just about anywhere and at any time. Drive or walk down the street and there are people talking on the telephone. The laptop computer, the personal data assistant, and the BlackBerry, which Luddite that I am, I understand combines a number of functions, including that of a mobile phone, along with the wireless internet connection, keep us in touch with all the people and data we need to keep on working. They keep us in touch, even when we'd rather be out of touch. So our great fight to move from the heavy work week of an agricultural economy has brought us beyond the 40-hour week to the how many hours are there in the week. Work, work, work. Even while we're up north or off, wherever we may go, vacation, work is right there. In case you can't tell, I'm kind of preaching to myself here. What is more, we've even gotten to the point that we schedule our leisure time. We set up times for golf, for tennis, to work out, to swim, even to take a walk. Everything has to fit a schedule, and the schedule fits into the ever-looming, always-present specter of what we need to accomplish in order to achieve what our society considers success. We're not laboring in the fields or in the factories like we used to do. Now we're laboring everywhere and just about all the time. R&R seems almost as elusive for us as it did for our ancestors in the fields and in the factories. So Mark's description of the experience Jesus and the disciples had on that long ago day in Galilee could easily describe many of us gathered here today. Not to mention those who are far too busy to come to church. They had not even leisure to eat. Isn't it sad that the drive-through fast food restaurant, or Peapod, And all the labor-saving devices weren't around in Jesus' day. Maybe the gospel would read differently. Maybe they would have said they ordered up dinner on the internet and it came. Maybe they faxed out for Chinese and it came. And Jesus fed 5,000 egg foo young. I don't think so. What we're hearing in the gospel is the perennial situation of human beings who keep forgetting that God has made them with a spot inside themselves that can only be filled by God. There is a desire in us for rest, for a peace that all of the money or success can buy can't give us. The kind of leisure we're looking for doesn't come on a cruise or during a trip to a favorite spot, or even sitting by a lake with a good book. As good as all of those things are. In fact, sometimes our search for leisure, for rest, apart from nourishing our spirits, is just one more sign of the deep need within us all. I came across something from Mary Hinkle's book, Signs of Belonging, which seems to make the point. Most debilitating for the glorifying and enjoying of God is just the fact that life happens. Days fill up with small events, duties, and responsibilities until we have succumbed to the temptation, as Annie Dillard says, to diddle around making itsy-bitsy friends and meals and journeys for itsy-bitsy years on end. We just don't notice anymore anything. I once heard the Lutheran writer and teacher Gerhard Frost comment that he had asked a rancher how sheep get lost. "It's easy," the rancher replied. "They just put their heads down and nibble themselves lost." How many of us are nibbling ourselves lost? With all of the good and important and necessary things we have to do each day and each week. It's easily done. God knows. I know that from personal experience. And sometimes we need to be reminded that in the midst of life happening, that there is more. There is more to life and more to us and just more. If we'll only take the time to step back and slow down and realize it. One of the reasons I'm grateful for the lectionary, both the weekly 3-year cycle that we tend to use here and the daily one that informs my personal prayer and meditation, is that it forces me to read and look at scripture I might otherwise choose to ignore. There is a lot of good material in Mark's gospel that I can sink my teeth into and just slip past the text that we read today. However, how can any of it honestly make sense unless I've heard and listened deeply to the invitation Jesus makes to his disciples, come apart and rest? That invitation is as surely to me and to you as it was to them. They needed to get away, to debrief, and to make sense of what was going on as life happened around them. They needed to remember anew what was important, what the real priorities are as life happens. And so do we. One of the best books that I know on prayer is by the late Russian bishop Anthony Bloom. Beginning to Pray addresses how we can sort out what is really important in the midst of busy lives. One of the first things Bloom does is to remind us that God is always there for us. We may open ourselves for an hour a week or even an hour a day, but we have to remember that God is there waiting during all of those other hours when we aren't being attentive to the presence of God. Part of our coming apart has to be realizing the presence of God that is always there and beginning to raise our consciousness to experience or to be aware of the constancy of the divine presence. Part of it is just allowing ourselves to stand in the present and to open ourselves to the now of God. In that moment, in this moment. When Bloom talks about the intersection of time and eternity in the now, he sounds like someone who wrote 200 years earlier, a French Jesuit by the name of Jean-Pierre de Caussade, who described that intersection as the sacrament of the present moment. Because what is a sacrament? It's simply an outward sign signifying a grace underneath. And in every minute, if we look, there is God under that moment, wherever we are, whatever we do. So how do we come to appreciate this? We stop. I wasn't going to put this in originally, but I think I'm going to tell it anyway. One of my favorite comedians is Bob Newhart. And Bob Newhart did a routine one night on Mad TV that I absolutely loved, and it was the $5 5-minute psychiatrist. I can cure anything that you have for $5 in 5 minutes. A woman came in and sat down and started talking about the fact that she had fear of of people around her. And as she started talking, all of a sudden Bob's listening, and then he looked at her and yelled, "Stop it!" She jumped back and she started talking again, and he said, "Stop it!" And every time she kept talking, he yelled, "Stop it!" And when she got up to leave, he said, "How are you?" She said, "Well, I'm not going to do that again. You're going to yell, 'Stop it!'" He said, "Thank you, that'll be $5. Sometimes, maybe we just need to stop it. We just need to stop. And Bloom says we need to stop and allow ourselves to do nothing. We place ourselves in the presence of God at the intersection of time and eternity, and we discover what it means to be in the now. And what it takes to do this is 5 minutes. 5 minutes of leisure that we can guarantee will not be interrupted. Read that we will not allow to be interrupted. Here is the moment, okay, as little as 3.5 or 5 minutes, Bloom says, that can allow us to begin to get in touch with who we are and with who God is. We don't need all sorts of elaborate prayers. We don't need all kinds of things with that. All we need to do is sit down and say to ourselves, as Bloom says, "I am seated. I am doing nothing. I will do nothing for 5 minutes." And then relax. And continually throughout this time, and he says 1 or 2 minutes is the most you'll be able to endure to begin with, realize this: I am here in the presence of God, in my own presence, and in the presence of the furniture that is around me, just still moving nowhere. And when we come to that, once we can come to a still point in the midst of our lives, we can open ourselves to see the divine presence all around us and all the rest of the hours of the day. And we need to do that because life happens and God is there in the midst of it, but only if we have the eyes to see God there. If you want proof of that, all you have to do is look at the text from Mark. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. They did what Jesus asked. And to the best of our ability, here we are doing the same thing, aren't we? I know many people come here of a Sunday morning seeking a spiritual tune-up, a little quiet time, something to fill them up again before they go out and get back at it again. Some folks, though, not as many as I would like, even come when we do the little retreat days here, or they go off for a special retreat weekend. That approach is without question commendable and helpful and should be part of our spiritual practice. However, in the process, we can also fall into another trap, which is just as problematic for our living our lives toward God and one another and growing in unity with God as ignoring it. And that trap is thinking that this is the only place and the only time where I can get the fill up. Or thinking that it's only in structured settings like a retreat or a getaway or in my little prayer time that I can get spiritual. Moments of prayer are sources of spiritual connection. So are times away, but they're not the only source. Look at the next line in the text. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. While they were going off to that deserted place, life happened. people recognized Jesus and they recognized the disciples who were just returning from that successful preaching mission, and they came looking for them. What did Jesus do? Sorry, closed. No, he taught them. Was Jesus breaking his own rule? I don't think so. But perhaps we're getting a different insight into how we're to approach the balance between sanctification, making our lives holy, and service. Joseph Donders, a priest in Africa, preaches homilies that are almost poems. I discovered his writings years ago, and I still turn to them for my own spiritual reading and often for a different perspective when I preach. And as I read what he had to say about this particular text, I liked it so much, I'm just going to share it with you because I can't say it any better than Joseph Donders did. When Jesus with his apostles arrived at the place where they intended to rest, the crowd that had followed them along the shore of the lake arrived too. They stepped out of the boat at the moment that the others stepped from behind the bushes, and there they were again. Jesus said to his followers, "You get away, take your rest. I'll take care of them." And again, he started to preach and to teach. And do you think that those activities did not sanctify him then? They were his glory and holiness, his mercy and his dedication. We are sanctifying ourselves not only when we are praying. We are sanctifying ourselves not only when we fill up our spiritual tanks. We are not even emptying those tanks when we are serving each other. Don't forget that in the end, he is, according to Matthew, not going to ask us how much did you pray, but how much did you serve. The tank of our spiritual life will not get empty by our activity. In fact, it will get fuller and fuller. A drummer does not lose his skill to drum by drumming. In fact, his skill to drum will improve, but he might get very tired. And it is only when we sincerely say that we are tired because of those services rendered in the Spirit of God that we may apply this gospel text to ourselves and take a rest and a good meal. Not to restore our spiritual life that got lost. It did not get lost. It could not get lost in that way. It grew. But to be able to continue our service and love again. What Donders was reflecting on with his congregation in Nairobi is what I think Paul was trying to do with the people in Ephesus. He reminds the church that in Christ God has reconciled all things so that peace, not just absence of conflict, but the presence of God may reign. Now we are no longer strangers and aliens, but are one with God, with all of humanity, indeed one with the entire created world. In that light, we can see that the role of the church isn't to be an institution or simply a voluntary service organization, kind of a spiritual Rotary or Kiwanis club, nor is it to be some kind of social club. No, you and I, we are the enfleshing of that peace in the midst of the world. You and I, the church, we bring the peace, and we do it by practicing it in our lives, like the drummer that Donders talks about. The role of the church, then, is to invite people around us to the deep rest that Jesus invites all people to take, to rest in God, to rest in the center of the self, to be still within ourselves, and to know that God is God. Even in the midst of the world's busyness, we rest, and then we go forth. With the peace and the rest at the center, to serve, and in serving, we practice the divine presence, and we see God. What we're talking about here is a transformation. It can only come if we open ourselves to the possibility and to the reality that we can be one with God. Then we must open our hearts and open our minds to receive this peace and this presence we've been talking about. And then we open our lives to live it out, because it is never enough just to talk about it. Like our drummer, we can know the theory of drumming, but can we keep the beat? The only way you find out is to do it. And the life of God is no different, dear ones. Living it out means that we become instruments of reconciliation, who actively work to heal on all antagonisms, divisions, inequality, injustice, and egoism, and we begin right here in this gathered people. To be in Christ is to see this and to do something about it, wherever we are, whoever we are. So we come apart so that we can go back, so that we can go back into the midst of life happening all around us and see God at work right in the middle of it. As life happens and all of the busyness crowds in around us, we can find the still point. We can find the calm center. We can find God. When we come to understand this, when we begin to live in the now of God's presence, we'll learn that R&R might mean rest and relaxation at the outset, but in its fullness, it's renewal and reconciliation. Regardless of where we are on the R&R meaning chart, we should take some regularly and make the world a different place as a result of it. It will only happen when we come apart and rest.